The news media have done more than their share of navel-gazing throughout the years. But 2010 was particularly rich for self-scrutiny. NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik is in New York. He's covered the coverage in 2010. Happy New Year, David.
Happy New Year, Leanne.
There were individual stories, the Stuart Colbert rally, say, the WikiLeaks, I mean, different news stories that all had value individually. But if you put all of these stories in a cauldron, would you see some common ingredients?
I guess the one thread that I've been trying to tease out through the year involves the question of trust, or another way to describe it is authoritativeness. That is, where do people trust to turn to get the news? Where do they look to and say, that's information that I find useful and that's information that I believe in? And I think we're seeing some transitions in how people define that.
Let's start with a big story, the WikiLeaks document dump. This really tested the bounds of what you call authoritativeness or trust. What were the issues at stake?
There are some competing interests at stake. WikiLeaks, of course, has obtained a treasure trove of many hundreds of thousands of documents, official cables that have been classified to varying degrees of secrecy. Earlier in the year, a question of videotape of American attack in Iraq several years ago, now question of diplomatic cables being published more recently. And the question is, who controls this information? Is it the government that creates and classifies this information, or a website that says, hey, we can post it, and in this case, we can do it in concert with a number of very distinguished news organizations throughout the globe. Julian Assange, the leader of WikiLeaks, actually spoke with our colleague Robert Siegel earlier this year. Here's how he described the usefulness of the documents they obtain.
These raw facts can be interpreted by others who are trying to propose alternative policies, by academics, by journalists, and by the people concerned with the war directly. Soldiers and the Afghanis.
And Assange describes himself as the editor-in-chief, and that is, of course, a journalistic title. But people question, is he a journalist? Is he a source? Is he a conduit? He obviously himself does have an agenda politically in the sense that he's very much against American military action abroad.
Several journalists actually made news in 2010 after being fired or disciplined for personal statements. Here's just a clip of some of the voices you may recognize.
I'm telling you that everybody who runs CNN is a lot like Stuart. And a lot of people who run all the other networks are a lot like Stuart. And to imply that somehow they, the people in this country who are Jewish, are an oppressed minority? Yeah.
I mean, look, Bill, I'm not a bigot. You know, the kind of books I've written about the civil rights movement in this country. But when I get on a plane, I got to tell you, if I see people who are in Muslim garb and I think, you know, they're identifying themselves first and foremost as Muslims, I get worried. I get nervous.
Any comments on Israel? We're asking everybody today. Any comments on Israel?
Tell them to get the hell out of Palestine.
That's longtime White House correspondent Helen Thomas, preceded by Juan Williams, whose comments on Fox led to his dismissal from NPR. And we began with Rick Sanchez on CNN. David Folkenflik, their dismissals raised a lot of questions about how journalists should behave. Have the rules changed? And if they have, why?
Well, the rules may not have quite have changed, but expectations are evolving, and the nature of news organizations themselves are evolving. So, you know, you have somebody like Juan Williams, our former colleague here at NPR, which sees itself as a straight-ahead news organization. Williams was operating in a climate that rewards strongly held opinion and personal assertion over at Fox News and on cable. Rick Sanchez, CNN, says, you know, we're straight-ahead, despite having critics from various sides. It says, you know, we can't be in the position of having our anchors create such controversy with statements that seem to us beyond the pale. Helen Thomas, you know, was a columnist, an opinion journalist by this point for Hearst newspapers after many decades as a wire service reporter. Her comments were seen as very much beyond the pale as well.
Jon Stewart also continued to make news. I mean, he calls The Daily Show fake news, but he made news for the way he satirically covered the news media. But when he was involved in the push to get the Senate to act on health benefits for 9/11 first responders, there was absolutely no mockery involved. Let's hear what he said.
This bill would provide $7 billion in medical and financial benefits for Ground Zero workers who get sick, and they're going to pay for it by closing a corporate tax loophole. It's a win-win-win-win. Just do it!
David Folkenflik, do you think the mandate from Jon Stewart's viewers has changed? I mean, do they expect him to take action now rather than just entertain them?
I think it's really about what Jon Stewart sees his role as in this kind of news culture and ecosystem. He says, look, I'm not a journalist, but he certainly does some rather serious interviews or interviews that get at serious points with newsmakers and consequential figures. When he took this job over from Craig Kilborn, he said, I want to do satire with a point. And I think you saw that with that so-called rally to restore sanity that he did with Stephen Colbert in the Washington Mall. They had a point to make, and they were talking about the hyper-heated rhetoric that we have that they both feel gets in the way of constructive political ends. He is willing to do satire with a point, and when no one else is paying attention, he's willing to make it quite pointed indeed.
NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik. Thanks a lot, David.
You bet.
You're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News.